Now, the Sunday Times reported over the weekend that Prime Minister Theresa May's team has privately admitted she may have to accept permanent membership of a European customs union. However, overnight, the government restated its commitment to leaving the EU's customs union ahead of a symbolic vote on the issue this week, although it will be purely symbolic and will not tie the government's hands. The Lords voted last week to stay in the customs union, and if enough Conservative MPs rebel in the Commons this week, the Prime Minister could lose her majority. The Northern Ireland Conservative, Frank Shivers, with us today, the economist and commentator Paul Gosling. Morning to you, Frank.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. Good morning to you, Paul.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. So, permanent membership of a European customs union, is that what people voted for, Frank?
No, absolutely not. And as you said in your opening gambit there, the government have reiterated their policy of getting out of the customs union. That is what the people voted for, and that's what the government are striving to do and negotiate.
Paul?
I don't think people were that clear-minded in terms of voting for retention of single market membership or customs union membership. I think a lot of people, particularly in England, were motivated by a desire to end freedom of movement. And there is a possibility, perhaps, that much though I would prefer to retain freedom of movement, perhaps we have to accept that that's what Brexit meant. But actually, you can perhaps still retain membership of the customs union. You can keep open the border in Ireland and give people what they want in terms of restrictions on freedom of movement.
Well, I'm sorry. I think that the vote was very clear, was to stay or leave the European Union. That was what was voted on. And people voted to leave the European Union?
Well, that's your analysis of it, but I don't think there's any evidence that actually was that clear-minded approach that, you know, specifically we wanted to leave both the single market and the customs union, nor was there, of course, any legitimate honesty in the campaigns in terms of what the economic impact would be. And we had the Red Bus falsely claiming savings that would never actually be realised, and in the end we will actually lose tax revenues out of the economic impact of Brexit. It will be much greater than the amount of money that will be saved in EU contributions.
Well, I think we had false claims on both sides, and that's to be fair. And economists like yourself predicted ultimate gloom and doom when we left the European, or during the process of leaving the European Union. The economy would be performing terribly, and the pound would be down, and employment would be down.
The pound was down, but actually, personally, I didn't ever predict that. I said there would be some damage immediately after the Brexit vote, which actually has happened. But over the longer term, the economic impact would be felt. That was what I said.
Well, I'm talking about the majority of the economists that give doom and gloom, that if the vote was yes, and you were talking about false claims. I mean, the economists came out in droves saying that it was going to be an economic wasteland in the UK, which has proved not to be true and will not be true. And I think what needs to happen is the democratic right of people who have voted out needs to be withheld or upheld. And we need to move forward and get the best deal for the UK within the union.
Well, clearly the best deal is not to leave the customs union. In fact, the best deal is not to leave the single market. That seems to have been decided. But basically, I mean, there's been very little conversation during the Brexit debate about what the impact on Ireland and what the impact on the Irish border would be. And it's left to the UK government, the Irish government and the European Commission to resolve how to keep open the Irish border. And ultimately, that is perhaps the most important element of what happens in future in terms of the relationship between the European Union and the UK. Yet it had virtually no conversation within the Brexit pre-referendum conversations.
Well, I think that the only people that are talking about hard borders with the Republic of Ireland are the Republic of Ireland and the EU Commission. Certainly the British government aren't talking about hard borders, and nobody else really is, apart from the Republic of Ireland government and the EU Commission.
Well, to be fair, one of the slogans of the Brexit campaign was regain control of our borders. Now, how you regain control of your borders while keeping an open border with an Ireland, I mean, that just does not make any sense to me. I mean, I think the simple truth is that people in England don't really care very much about what happens to Northern Ireland or the border. And actually, it comes down to people like us and the European Commission and the UK government to come to a solution that enables us to retain adherence to the Good Friday Agreement and what that means, and to avoid any conflict going back in the future.
The government and Theresa May have made it very plain that Northern Ireland is an integral part and a fully fledged part of the United Kingdom. And then they show that commitment on a daily basis and on a yearly basis with the block grant that comes to Northern Ireland. So, I mean, I completely disagree with your...
Here's John in North Belfast. Morning, John.
Here we go again. Is the British public supposed to be stupid and ignorant, Stephen?
What do you mean?
This was well debated in the run-up to the referendum. Everyone knew that we were leaving the customs union and the single market. Even the Prime Minister at the time told the people. And for this to be rerun again, it just means that British people are stupid or ignorant and they can't understand.
Or, and that's of course one very valid argument that you could make, John, or you could argue that the decision to leave the EU is so massive, has so many implications on our economy and our future, that maybe the public should have a second chance now that a year has unfolded and they've seen what has happened. My goodness, maybe the vote would be even bigger next time, or maybe not. Why wouldn't you, if you're so confident that Brexit is the right thing for this country, why wouldn't you allow people to vote again? It would just reinforce the validity of the referendum, would it not?
Right, Stephen, I'll give you an example. The Good Friday Agreement. Every year was a referendum, many referendums held in Northern Ireland Republic. We voted for the Good Friday Agreement. There were things that was in that was not in that Good Friday Agreement. I'll give you an example. On the run ladders to terrorists. Does that mean we have a rerun of that referendum?
John, thank you. Mervyn in Hollywood. Morning, Mervyn.
Good morning, Stephen. Can I ask Frank a question, Stephen?
Yes.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello, Frank.
He's here. There. Go ahead.
Frank, is it not true that the referendum on the EU was based not on the economy but based on immigration?
I would say that was a large part of it. I'm not going to lie, Mervyn. Certainly that would have influenced a lot of people in southern England, without a doubt. Because of the issues that they're having with the immigration.
Yeah. Well, my second question is, does that not reflect truthfully the way people feel? If they're voting on the colour of someone's skin, surely it would be possible to say to people in the second referendum, no, this referendum is solely based on the economy, the future and the economics, not immigration.
No, as I said, I think that it was a major issue for a number of people in the United Kingdom with immigration, and possibly that was a main motivating factor, but it wasn't the only one. The economy and the way that we're having to sort of bow down to the EU, and also the monetary contribution that we give to the EU, we're a net contributor to the EU. So, you know, the money that we give to them, we don't get anywhere near the same back. So it makes sense that if we're putting X amount of £1 billion into Europe, if we just put it into our own country and we can negotiate deals with other states that we weren't allowed to because we were members of the EU, it makes sense that our economy will grow and that we'll have some more money for our own regions.
I understand that, Frank, but at the end of the day, the market is the market, and we will be leaving one of the biggest markets in the world, that is the EEC. We're going to be moving out of it.
No, we're not moving out of it. And in fact, that's some of the propaganda that we're hearing. We're not moving out of it. It's not that all of a sudden we're not going to trade with the EU. We're just renegotiating the deals that we have with them. We're no longer going to have a proper EU union that basically precludes us from dealing with other states that are not in the EU. So, I mean, we have a vast opportunity to take other countries and move forward economically with them, along with the EU. We'll negotiate a new deal, which hopefully will be beneficial to both. In fact, it's likely to be beneficial to both, but it won't tie us in just just to the EU.
Quarter past nine this morning, Theresa May's team privately admitted she may have to accept permanent membership of a European customs union. This is what was being reported yesterday. The Prime Minister's insisted the UK will leave the common tariff area so it can pursue free trade deals outside the EU. We're getting your reaction to this morning. Tommy in Ballymoney. Morning, Tommy.
Morning, Colm.
Stephen.
Ever since this started, I heard it off and on. Now, as far as I'm concerned, they're too late of leaving Europe. Germany owns Britain.
Too late?
Britain is just a province of Germany.
What way did you vote, Tommy?
Eh?
What way did you vote?
To leave.
And you still think that's the right decision?
If I leave it correctly, if they stay on, Germany has took over Britain. Everything that's been sold now nearly in Britain, it comes to Germany. You ever look at the names on things that you're using and find that Germany owns the whole of Europe? I never heard in one of these programs, either yours or Williams or the General News, the difference between the imports and exports of Germany and Britain.
Paul Gosling, what would the difference? Paul Gosling, I don't know if you have the stats in your head. Fine if you don't, but what would the difference be, Paul?
I think that Germany obviously has a big surplus in terms of goods exports. I mean, you know, Mercedes Benz, BMWs, Audis, etc. On the other hand, the services exports from the UK are very strong indeed and massively outperform the services imports. So, you know, the UK was rebalanced back in Margaret Thatcher's days away from a manufacturing economy towards a services economy. Whether you like that or not, the truth is that that means that we get a lot of manufactured goods coming in, but we have a lot of service exports going out.
The question is, will Theresa May roll over again? We've seen how her critics have suggested that she has rolled over on different aspects of the deal, the divorce bill, for example, being one of them, Paul.
Absolutely true. I mean, my concern is that Theresa May seems to be more concerned about managing the internal politics of the Conservative Party than actually getting the best deal for the UK. And clearly, she's very concerned that the majority of the Conservative Party is pro-Brexit. But how she actually achieves a Commons majority is very unclear. I mean, I think that the news this morning that was put around on Radio 4 earlier today was that she's going to say, well, it's going to be a vote of confidence, and that if she loses a vote in the House of Commons on retaining leaving membership of the customs union, then she, you know, the government falls. And the point has been made by an academic this morning that, in fact, you can't have votes of confidence anymore since the fixed term of Parliament legislation was introduced. So actually, you know, we've been governed by threats, and it's threats about MPs trying to get them into behaving themselves as she sees it. And what this really means is that we have very little clarity about what's going on. You know, all this time after the Brexit referendum, we still don't actually know whether we're going to be in the customs union. We don't actually have the opportunity for employers and businesses to plan. And, you know, the other thing we must not forget is that so many employers and employers' organisations are saying that without freedom of movement, without some form of immigration, they will not be able to actually have the skills they need to run their businesses. I mean, it's absurd that we're this long after the Brexit referendum and there's so much uncertainty.
Here's James and Donald. Morning, James.
Good morning. I just wanted to make a point that once Brexit actually occurs, there is no compunction on other countries to have a deal with the UK which is favourable to the UK. They know that the UK will be negotiating.
They will want to do business with the UK, though, James. That's the pressure.
Yes, of course, but they want to do it at the right terms. And they know that not only do they want to do business with the UK will be absolutely desperate to do business with them. And the fact of the matter is that they're actually considering now to have some form of deal with the EU, which keeps them, if you like, within the ambit of the EU. Don't forget, the EU was negotiating deals for the UK with other countries outside the UK, outside the European Union. It wasn't as if Britain never had a deal with the rest of the world.
Frank Shivers?
And anyway...
Sorry, well, that's not true. I mean, yes, they were negotiating deals with other countries on behalf of the EU, but quite often those deals weren't favourable to the United Kingdom. We now have the opportunity with our elected representatives when we're out of Europe to negotiate those deals ourselves for the benefit of the UK, not for the benefit of the European Union.
Let me just make the point that the United States of America, whom Theresa May is pinning her hopes on, having a deal with them, is not a very stable partner for a trade deal. America is now isolationist and will not have a deal with the UK, which is beneficial to the UK and not beneficial, and not more beneficial to the United States.
We're not just pinning our hopes on the United States. We've got hundreds of other countries that we couldn't deal with in the European Union because of the treaty with Europe.
Rich countries, yeah.
Well, there's a lot of Commonwealth countries that we're now able to. The doors are now open.
You think Australia, after Britain abandoned Australia and New Zealand when they entered the UK, entered the EU, do you think that they will now say, oh, yes, we recognise the UK as our leader? Right? They're not going to do that.
Well, I think trade links with the United States, Australia, and New Zealand and the other Commonwealth countries have never been stronger. And because of the fact that we've taken the decision to come out of the EU and we can negotiate a deal direct on a one-to-one basis.
And the EU just announced a deal with Mexico at the weekend. There's no stopping James this morning.
At the Commonwealth.
James, thank you. Aidan next. Morning, Aidan.
Good morning. How are you, Stephen?
Go ahead, Aidan. Thanks for calling us.
I'm the director of the Northern Ireland Retail Consortium, and we this morning launched our Brexit campaign, which is a fair deal for consumers in Northern Ireland. What we're really saying is that we're calling on the UK government and the EU. So we're agnostic about whether Brexit's right or Brexit wrong. What we're trying to do is protect the Northern Ireland consumer. And what we have, we've put together some numbers with our colleagues in the British Retail Consortium. And if we go even to most favoured nation tariffs, things like beef could be 37% dearer. It could be 43% dearer on cheese.
Yeah, key beer. Word there, could be.
It could be.
Could not be.
Absolutely.
Stop scaremongering.
It's not scaremongering. What we're actually trying to do is these are the facts of what could happen if we don't get a satisfactory deal. So what we're asking the EU and the government here is to take a thought about the Northern Ireland consumer. We already have half of the discretionary income spending power that our counterparts in Great Britain have. So what we're really saying is that we need to look at this in the whole and holistically, without the ideologies in it, and really look at how the Northern Ireland consumer could be affected. And it's not just about the tariffs. You know, the agreement that was made in December between the UK and the EU makes it clear there'd be no barriers for goods leaving Northern Ireland, but it doesn't give the same assurance to goods coming into Northern Ireland. So our members and their supply chain bring hundreds of lorries into Northern Ireland every day, and any delays or administrative burdens could affect the cost of everyday products to our consumers, from groceries to clothes to everything in between.
Well, this is speculation, isn't it? And people who voted for Brexit will be quite angry this morning, Aidan, that you're depicting this pessimistic doomsday scenario.
We're not predicting a doomsday scenario. We're saying what could happen if we don't get a satisfactory deal. We have been.
Why aren't you
agnostic.
Telling us what could happen if we get a great deal?
If it's a great deal, then there'll be very little will change. But what we need to do,
that's not true. That's just not true. And I think that Stephen's right that a lot of people that have voted for Brexit will be very disappointed with what you're saying. And as a trade association, I think it's very dangerous what you're saying. The government locally are dealing with all the trade associations, Retail NI, FSB, the Chamber of Commerce, CBI, all of them. And whilst I totally agree as a business person in Northern Ireland, the situation needs to move on and clarity needs to become very, very quickly so we can do the best for our businesses. The things that you're saying are complete, you know, if we don't get a good deal.
You're saying they couldn't happen. You're saying that they couldn't happen, Frank. You're saying that this could not happen.
You're saying
You're saying if we don't get a good deal, this is going
correct.
To
I'm not saying that it's certain. What I'm saying is that we have to. If you give me a second, Frank, what I'm saying is that our government and the EU need to work to protect our consumers to make sure this doesn't happen. We have to plan for these uncertainties. Business and the consumer in Northern Ireland have been hard pressed ever since the Brexit deal happened because we quite simply have not had that certainty. What we need now is for the EU and for our government to get us a deal that makes sure that the Northern Ireland consumer is looked after and is protected, because quite simply we cannot afford, and they cannot afford, to absorb any cost rises. So what we're saying, we're not trying to scaremonger, we're trying to say let's make these negotiations and these deals as meaningful, as tangible, and as beneficial as possible for the Northern Ireland consumer.
Sorry, you're not saying that. You're saying that if a deal is not, a satisfactory deal is not reached, that there's a doom and gloom. What I would suggest
those are the facts.
The trade association, you would be far better served meeting with government officials, putting your case, putting what needs to happen.
And maybe Frank, to be fair to Aidan, you'd be better served listening to the reality on the ground for people who are trying to pay their rates and their staff costs and drive a business.
Stephen, I'm one of those people.
Well, you may be, but Aidan is the director of the consortium.
And you're going to meet with trade associations every other day.
Well, Aidan, are you saying that there is fear of Brexit, or what are you saying?
No, I am not trying to fear scaremonger in any way, shape, or form. What I'm trying to do is say that there's a possibility, and what we need to do is to make the best of what we have, and to make sure that both the EU and there's no ideology in here. We have always been quite clear that we're not for Brexit, we're not against Brexit. What we're in, we're trying to be the arbiter of common sense here and look at what the possibilities are and how do we try and get the best deal for the Northern Ireland business and Northern Ireland consumer. And Frank, I have talked to government, I continue to talk to government, I talk to other trade associations day and daily. You know what? And there are concerns. There's a lot of concerns both in the public and in the business world. And I'm sure a man such as yourself who has his own business hears those concerns as well. We're not trying to stoke any fires here. What we're trying to say is that we do need that common sense arrangement. It's not about the huge ideological points which seem to be pushing and shoving at the moment in these Brexit negotiations, and it's not about brinkmanship. It's about remembering about the people in Northern Ireland, the everyday consumer and the everyday business who simply can't afford any raises. So what we need to do is protect them from that and get a deal that is beneficial to Northern Ireland.
Now, well, if that's the case, we're on the same page then. We're on the same page. I'm trying to drive a deal that's with Northern Ireland in mind.
Yeah, the thing is, Brexit is happening. We are not jumping on a bandwagon and saying, oh, we need another vote, or we need this, or we need that, or we need the other. What we are saying is these are the possibilities. And if we had been anti-Brexit, we'd have been calling on the government, and that's it. We're not. We're aiming for, we've asked for meetings with the EU. My colleagues in the BRC have been over to Brussels several times. I'm hoping to go over as well, because we're putting pressure on the EU as well, not just the UK government. This isn't about ideology. This is about getting the best for the Northern Ireland consumer and the best for Northern Ireland business.
Here's Stephen Antrim. Morning, Stephen.
Good morning. In 2 months will be 2 years since the United Kingdom decided that they were going to leave. 2 years. But there's a very clear message with all of this, and that it is that the European Union, you see, never having had a member state leave or apply to leave before, is sticking its claws in. It doesn't want to start the fracture in that arrangement that has grown and grown from the half a dozen members in the beginning to the behemoth that it has become. And I think that with all of the commentary, because you can get the to's and fro's back and forward, everybody trying to promote their self-interest on this, at the end of the day, it is the European Union, and particularly their bureaucrats, who must be sitting back laughing and chortling over the fact that internally you still have these arguments about what is going to be best and otherwise. You just cannot leave the European Union. And that, I think, is borne out, as I said, almost 2 years after a vote
and everything that is thrown up is met with a no. In other words, and I don't want to sound other than humorous with this, we have ways of making you stay.
Richard in Lisburn. Morning, Richard. Thank you, Stephen. Morning, Richard.
Good morning, Stephen. My point is, in 2016, you had Barack Obama, Christine Lagarde, George Osborne coming on saying we were going to be faced with thousands of pounds worth of more tax on us. We had David Cameron threatening things that we were all going to be punished if we left. If they had just kept quiet, gave us the information we required, and let us decide ourselves,
Richard,
people would have decided to say.
Richard, thank you. And Stuart, hello, Stuart.
Hello. It was just a question that I wanted to ask. Are we already importing goods from outside the EU? I see that, I looked on a government website, that we do import from Australia already. We do India. We also do America. And we do a few other countries. If we leave the EU, how is that going to improve? Are we not going to lose all the trade from the EU then? And we will not, we'll get this little dribble-drabble from the rest of the world?
Frank?
Well, our trade deals with those countries are governed by the EU, so they're potentially not as good terms as what we could get individually by going to these countries on a one-to-one basis. So I would argue that negotiations would be positive and that we would negotiate a better deal with the likes of Australia because we wouldn't have to be paying tariffs and whatnot to Europe or the larger tariffs to Europe.
But you will be paying tariffs?
Well, it depends on what deal we strike. We may say to Australia, you know, there's no tariff for you to import as long as we have no tariffs to export.
Here's a perfect example for you. Our imports from China last year actually dropped by 1.1 billion. There was a 2.9 billion import from China last year. It dropped 20%. America, we actually had 3 billion, and it dropped by 14%.
And I would argue that if we have free trade with them, if we have an open door, whereas China and the UK government negotiating.
Sorry, Frank, you're wrong. You will not get free trade with America. They are tariffed, and you will be tariffed as well. And it's the same with the rest. You're going to be tariffed in Europe as well. You're going to be tariffed in Europe. These people are not going to do this for free. They're not, because they're big countries. They have more.
You must concede that a deal with a one-to-one country is far better than having to deal through a European Union that is looking at all countries involved.
No,
surely a deal is a better deal than a one-to-one deal.
Stuart, are you you sound quite well read about this. Stuart, are you in business, or have you taken a keen interest in this, or what?
Well, I have a keen interest in it. So I have actually been following this for a number of years. Anyway, what actually goes out of the country comes into the country. See, all this, this is on government websites anyway. You can go and look at it. It's free to look at, and it gives you all the information. What we get is this load of nonsense coming out from politicians at this particular time. They need to go and look at the government websites and look at it. And you don't have to look at it. You can look at all the countries' websites as well, and they'll tell you what's actually coming out.
Sure, thank you. Let's take one more call on this. Tony in West Belfast, then we'll move on. Morning, Tony.
Morning, Stephen. Sorry. Stephen, I'd like to take Frank Trivers to task in relation to what he actually has said. He has said, and it's totally illogical, it's Clyde Cuckoo-Land, but he has said that he would anticipate that in regard to negotiations currently taking place, that there would be a very beneficial deal as a result of his negotiations.
It would be what?
He said negotiations with the EU.
Tony, we're losing you, mate. I'm sorry, we're losing you in the phone. But so we'll say sorry about that. I'm sure we'll get you on again. Frank and Paul, thank you very much. It's 9 minutes.